Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Today, I have our senior consultant, Rob Burtman, joining us, and we're going to talk about the state of the housing market. How's it going, Rob?
Hey, good, Travis.
You are one of the chosen few in the Student Loan Planner team, and that you've been a homeowner for, I think, almost 10 years now?
Yeah, over 10 years. Well, I had a condo that I bought in 2005, and then I bought a house in 2010.
So, okay. So
been a long road.
The condo in 2005, that sounds like the perfect timing to get involved in the condo market. What happened with that one?
When I moved to St. Louis from New York, and obviously New York is very expensive, and St. Louis cost of living is really cheap. And so when I first moved here, I was like, I felt like I could buy anything, you know, compared to what I was paying in my rent in New York and all that. But I decided to wait. You know, the housing market was rising, but not, it wasn't quite at its peak, and it wasn't sort of in like the bubble status, but things were frothy. So I was looking at like buying a house in like a random neighborhood versus buying a condo in like a nicer part of town. And so I decided to buy the condo in the nicer part of town in like the better school district and all that stuff. Lived in that. And then the housing market crashed. I found that houses were like on sale. So we thought, well, now's a good time to move up. We bought our house, tried to sell our condo. This was like 2010, obviously couldn't sell it. So we got renters in there for 3 years and then sold it in like 2012 or 13 for actually less money than what we paid for it in 2005. So it took a little bit of hit on that.
Wow.
But we got a much better deal because we bought the house when we did.
So are you saying it's not a guarantee that housing prices go up?
Yeah. And actually before that, I lived in Las Vegas for like about 6 months between New York and St. Louis. And I was looking at condos there. I was looking at like, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom condos and looking around and, you know, like 2,000 square feet, they were like $300,000. I was like, oh, well, that doesn't sound too bad. Again, me coming from New York. And the real estate agent was like, oh, well, the person who bought this last year only paid $200,000. And I was like, oh, well, what did they do to this? They're like, nothing. They just bought it. The market's so hot, you know, now it's 50% more. And at that point, I was like, I'm going to pass. I don't want to buy that. I'm not going to get into something that just raises 50% for no reason. Like, there's got to be something bad that's about to happen. And as we all know, the housing market in 2010, 11, 12, especially in Las Vegas and that area, you know, it really plummeted like more than 50%. So, you know, sometimes you can tell when things are frothy and sometimes you do it anyway.
Okay. So you've got a market that is on fire right now. You've got things that are going above asking price, in some cases, 6 figures above asking price. I think one of the things that really blew me away is like I was having dinner with one of my wife's friends. Christine was in this conference or something. And we were talking to her and she said that they got outbid by $400,000.
Holy
on this
cow.
House that they, I mean, like talk about just absolutely nuts. So it does seem like things are letting up a little bit in terms of, you know, it's not quite as crazy with what's going on right now at this very moment in August of 2021, right? But it's still crazy. Like there's still no houses for sale. Like, you know, and we just bought a house. My family just bought a house and I feel like we learned quite a bit. So I'm not sure exactly where to start, I guess, but I think let's start with what the listener's going through. The listener is probably in one of two spots right now. You either have a house that you've owned for a little while that you're really positive on, because if you bought a house prior to or, you know, early stage pandemic, you're up a lot. So you're either that kind of person and you're thinking like, oh my gosh, how lucky are we? or what kind of, you know, renovation should we do? Or, you know, what should we do with all this extra money? Or probably what's the most common situation people are finding themselves in right now is I don't yet own a house, or I'm going through the house buying experience, or I'm considering buying a house. That's probably the bigger group of this audience, I think. Let's talk in this episode mostly to that person who has not yet bought that house or is thinking about buying that next house. Like, in other words, you know, maybe they already own a smaller starter home, but they're thinking about trying to upgrade. So they're going to be in the home buying market in the next couple of years. What kind of things are you hearing and seeing out there in the market for real estate right now?
Oh, boy. Well, I think it is starting to slow down a little bit because I think everyone's kind of made their moves or maybe been priced down saying, ah, we'll wait. But I'm hearing a lot of people not putting full 20% down. I'm hearing about a lot of 10% down or less just to get in the house. I hear a lot of people thinking about, well, interest rates are so low now. If I don't get a house now, then it'll be more expensive later. Those are probably the two main things I hear. When I talk to my real estate agent friends, they're all like super busy. And at this point, they're all pricing it with the expectation that they're going to take out get taken out above offering price.
Here's kind of some of the things that I'm seeing. So people are really overvaluing remodels right now. Like, if something's been fully remodeled, you're going to put way more than what the asking price is in a lot of cases, just because people really like something that's turnkey right now because of the stress of the pandemic. You don't want people coming in your house. You don't want having to navigate a crazy market for lumber. You don't want to have to deal with the supply shortage for materials and be waiting months wondering when your cabinets are going to show up. So just a personal experience that we're dealing with right now. We want to remodel our kitchen. We bought this house $70,000 below asking price, which we feel pretty excited about, but there's also a reason why we got it so far below asking price. One of the reasons was they were advertising the home incorrectly. They were saying it was a 3,500 square foot home. We measured it and it was 3,100 square feet. So they were overstating the price of the home by more than 10%. And in a market where, you know, square footage is like $200 to $300 a square foot in like really nice neighborhoods, you know, that's a huge difference in the price. So that was one of the problems. The other problem is it needs like pretty much total renovation. It's livable. Like, everything about the house is usable. There's nothing like that's non-functional, but it's like from the 1970s. What we're trying to navigate right now is, okay, you've got to remodel your kitchen, but you also want to refinish and restain the hardwood floors and paint the interior of the house that hasn't been painted in a long time. And so the problem is if you tear down your kitchen, you rip apart your kitchen, well, now you got to repaint that area. And so you really need the kitchen remodel to be done before the painting. And then you also probably want the hardwood floors to be done after the kitchen remodel as well. Well, the problem is the hardwood floor people are scheduling into like November, December, as we record this in August. And if you tell them you need to bump them because the kitchen remodel is not done yet, well, then suddenly they have to reschedule down in like March or April. And so the really hard part is, okay, so now you've got this kitchen thing and the big shortage in the supply chain problem is, okay, the cabinets, it's unpredictable. So are the cabinets going to arrive like in November? Are they going to arrive in October? Or are they going to arrive in January because they can't find the wood to put them together, right? And so it's just kind of nuts. And I think that what I'm finding in the real estate market is people are responding rationally to that stress. My wife and I have already had some disagreements about this. We've already had some stressful conversations about this. And it's not fun, you know, like remodeling a house in normal times, I think, is not easy, but at least it's like somewhat predictable. Like, oh, like, you know, you get the cabinets like within a couple days of this date, or at least it's a little bit more straightforward. But like in this pandemic, everything is like unpredictable, from when the people that can start working on it to when the materials are going to arrive. And the prices are unpredictable, with like lumber prices like going so volatile, people don't know how to quote things. So it's just all these dislocations. And so I think people are looking at certain kinds of houses that are done and they're saying, well, that's not worth what you're asking. That's worth 20% more, right? So I think that that's what's interesting to me, is like everybody gets this idea of, oh, everything's going above asking. Well, that's not true. Some houses that are going for below asking, and then some houses that are going for way more, at least from my observation in the market that I've seen in the past few months, it's mostly, you know, how much of a pain in the butt kind of renovation situation do you want to take on? And are you okay living in a house that needs a ton of renovation for an unpredictable amount of time?
The renovation thing is real. I mean, we're doing a small renovation. We were going to do like a big one before the pandemic hit. The cost was, we're like, it doesn't make sense to put that much work into this house. And then we decided to pare back. And had we gone through that major project before, my contractor was like, oh yeah, the cost would have been 50% higher because of lumber costs, you know, like labor shortage, everything. People have really had to do their research and look at their own personal situation. I feel like buying the right house for you is really important. But at the same time, you know, you kind of have to do some research and see a bunch of stuff. I feel like I don't know anybody who moves into a house and says, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly what I wanted. It could be the nicest house, or it could be, you know, one that's not as nice. Everyone always wants to make improvements no matter what. And so there's no such thing as the perfect house, because you don't know until you live in a place if it's actually going to be right. Like, oh, you know, I wish, you know, like it used to be open floor plans were like really popular, and they still are a little bit. But when you got little kids running around and there's no walls, it gets really loud. So then people are like putting up walls, you know, like laying down carpet, you know. So you never know until you live in a house how it's going to fit for you. So I would say, if you feel like, oh, this is our house, this is the one, it might not necessarily have to be that one. So I still urge people to be patient and not get into the, you know, the fever of like, oh, we got to buy now or else we'll never be able to do that. I don't think that's ever been the case in the short run, yeah, that might be true. But in the long run, it's better served to find the thing that's best for their family situation.
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, let's tell the real reason why you put off your renovations on your house, okay? It's because that the student loan interest pause in the pandemic, student loan payment pause happened. And then, greedy Rob, you weren't banking as many student loan consults anymore, right? So you couldn't. And that's a great time, by the way, to mention that President Biden just extended the payment and interest pause until January 31st of 2022. That's good news for all of our consultants. It means that they don't have to go through their renovations on their houses during that period. They can wait for the supply dislocations to end, and then we'll be super busy in beginning of 2022. I'm joking around a little bit. I think that it's a good time to not have to renovate your house if you don't have to.
Right. The real reason is because the cost of the renovation, we're going to add like a two-story addition with like a master suite and like all this stuff. And the cost of doing that project was going to be about as much as we paid for our entire house 10 years prior. And so we're like, it's not worth it. So we decided to pare back, and we're going to do some sort of like, you know, staged kind of improvements over time. But no, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about kind of local nuances, right? So one thing that I've discovered is the permitting process is really terrifying. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but it's interesting because if somebody lives out in the country, it's one set of rules. And then if you live in a town, especially a town that's like really into green spaces and environmental protections and things like that, that's going to come with a lot of rules and regulations in terms of your project. Mm-hmm. What I'm finding is sort of the permitting process adds costs because you have to go through and get everything approved. Your contractor has to submit all the paperwork and designs. And I think that's one of the reasons, for example, why some of the additions and projects that we're looking at are more expensive is because you have, you know, additional things you have to jump through. Some of that's for good reason. Homeowners obviously want to make sure things are done safely to make sure that the neighborhoods retain their value. But it is kind of an interesting process. So let's talk more to that home buyer that's listening, or prospective home buyer that's listening right now. So they are seeing a market that is totally nuts. And you're seeing a lot of people get down payment assistance help from their parents. You're seeing a lot of people come in from out of state, like in California. That's happening a whole lot here in North Carolina. People are leaving California with massive amounts of equity, and they're taking that massive amount of equity in their home, and they're getting a normal mortgage for what they can afford here in North Carolina. And they're taking that massive amount of money and like putting it in above the appraisal to buy whatever they want to buy, basically. So if that is what people are competing with, how do you not lose your head in a market like that?
Well, right. I mean, you also, another thing to mention is just the low interest rates makes the monthly payment, you can afford more house. If mortgage rates were 5% versus 3%, I think you can actually purchase about 50% more house for the same monthly payment with that 2% drop in interest rates. So that's also, you know, the low interest rates are really propping up the prices too, because people don't buy houses based upon the cost. They look at the monthly payment, just like they do when they buy cars.
Can you explain why that is? Like, that doesn't sound something that makes sense to somebody that doesn't do financial math, right? Like, why would a house cost so much more at a 5% interest rate than a 3% interest rate in terms of what the monthly payment is?
Because most mortgages, if you do a 30-year mortgage, that's a long time. So let's just say someone has a $500,000 mortgage and the interest rate is 5%. Well, what they do is they calculate what's the level payment. It's called an amortization schedule. What's the level payment that over a 30-year period, they'll pay down the interest and pay down the principal to zero. If the interest rate is higher, let's just say someone has a $500,000 mortgage and at a 5% mortgage rate, their interest can be $25,000 for the year. You divide that by 12, that's about $2,000 in interest in the first month, aside from what the principal payment would be.
I just did this. So, did you? Yeah, so $500,000 mortgage, $2,684 a month if the interest rate's 5%. Mm-hmm. With total interest paid of $466,000.
Okay.
And then if I put in the same calculator, I put in 3%, the payment drops from about almost $2,700 to $2,100 with about half the total interest paid. So you're saying that basically the interest paid just gets divided into that 360 months. And then, you know, the effect of adding extra interest rate onto something like a 30-year term, which is so long, is kind of like this exponential thing almost, where it just makes that payment just go way up.
Right. And then you have a levered return too, because you're putting whatever amount down. And so if the less you put down, the more impact it has on the mortgage payment itself. Right? Obviously, another way to say it is the bigger the mortgage, the bigger the effect of a lower interest rate, the cheaper it makes a a lower interest rate makes a big mortgage cheaper, a lot cheaper.
Right. So if you think about like someone come from California, they've got a ton of equity that they're able to put down on their next house. So their mortgage they might qualify for based on their income would allow them to, in other words, to buy way more house than they could just with that, you know, big return that they're bringing with that down payment. It's going to make their mortgage payment even lower by putting in a bigger down payment if they wanted to, right?
Right.
So you've got a really, really hot housing market. What could happen? Are we expecting a fall in this market? Are we expecting a crash? Like what are some of the things that you think that could happen in the housing market in the next several months or years?
I think just like anything, you know, kind of like when the stock market is overvalued, it's hard to know whether there's going to be a crash. But what we do know is that it just means there's going to be lower returns going forward over a longer period of time. So if housing prices grow on average, you know, 3-4% a year, if we're in a frothy market, maybe they'll only grow by 1-2% a year for the next 10 years. That could be a drop and then a recovery, or it could be just sort of slogging along for a little bit. It's kind of hard to know. You know, the pandemic obviously forced a lot of people to look at their housing situation and say, if I'm going to be trapped in here again, we need more space. You've got the low prices, high prices, low interest rates. You've got people itching to get more space. You've got shortages in the supply chain and shortages in the supply of housing. So my guess is at some point, all that's going to unwind. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be in the next 6 months, in the next 3 years, but it's going to unwind and the heatedness is going to cool down. But I don't know if it's going to mean a crash. Maybe in some markets it will, you know, or maybe some segments of the market. Like in my neighborhood, a 4-bedroom house is going for about like 30% more than a 3-bedroom house. But a new construction 4-bedroom house is going for over 100% more. It's double the price of like a older 4-bedroom house. You got to think that why would someone pay twice the amount? So maybe that higher end market is going to drop off because there's only so many people that can afford that level of house. So it could be like a fragmented sort of slowdown, or it could be, you know, the whole thing slowing down. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, here's my opinion. If you can have the housing market payment go up higher by having a higher interest rate, if you have higher interest rates on mortgages, then you'll have lower housing prices, all things equal. I think the Federal Reserve is showing key indicators that they're going to slow down their purchases on bonds. So one thing that's really propping up the housing market is the Federal Reserve right now, because the Federal Reserve is buying $120 billion a month in bonds, $40 billion of which I believe is mortgage bonds specifically, which directly pushes down the interest rates on mortgages. Like you talked about, if you have a 3% mortgage, your payment is, say, $2,100. If you have a 5% mortgage, your payment's $2,700 on a $500,000 mortgage. What happens, though, is as people don't celebrate with a lower housing payment, they pay more because they're like, oh, great, I can afford $2,700 a month. So, you know, with these interest rates of 3%, instead of paying $500,000 for my house, I'm willing to pay $600 or $650. And that's why things are so on fire right now, is because they've held down the interest rates artificially low, which is pushing the price of housing artificially high. And there's been a lot of people in the Federal Reserve that have said, hey, it doesn't seem like we should be supporting the housing market right now. We're exacerbating an affordability crisis and we're risking big inflation, which means that if they back off of that, by necessity, housing would have to cool a little bit. So I think that it seems like a no-brainer that housing would cool. Now, the reality is housing cooling, like you said, could simply be that houses sit a little bit longer on the market. And then instead of going for way above asking price, maybe they go more closer to the asking price. And so if things are going way above asking price, what could happen is people continue to adjust their prices upwards and they receive fewer bids, and then time on market goes up higher. So that's kind of what I would think would happen. Now, the flip side to this is, Rob, what's going on in the labor market right now? Are wages like, you know, really low, or wages kind of on fire?
They're on fire.
Yeah. So my thought process on this is landlords like to pass along costs to tenants. I mean, you know, if you have high property taxes, a landlord's going to pass that through to the tenant in the form of rent. My thought process on rent is the eviction moratorium, you know, got extended through October 3rd. We'll see what happens if that gets state left alone or if it gets struck down or something. But eventually when that happens, you've got a lot of landlords that I think are going to pass along the costs of a, you know, non-zero risk of an eviction moratorium either now or in the future. And I think they're going to want to try to make back a lot of that money they lost by raising the rent significantly. And with wages being much higher, I think that you're going to see rents go a lot higher simply because they can. And if people can't afford to buy a house because the housing market's really high, then they're going to have to turn towards the rental market. And so my thought process there is that that could lead to rents being significantly higher too. That's just my thought process, I guess, is that rents are going to continue to go up. The housing market is probably going to calm down a little bit. So if you're trying to buy a house, don't despair. I think you will have an opportunity. And the other thing I'll say is this. I bought a house with my wife in a time when I really didn't want to buy one. I'll just come out and say it. Okay. Full disclosure. I did not want to buy a house right now. That was like the last thing that I wanted to do, but it ended up being a mixed blessing because the water main for our apartment that we were staying in burst in the building. The whole building water main burst and it unloaded everything into our apartment because we're on the first floor. So everything got soaked. Our Moroccan rugs we bought on our honeymoon like are totally drenched. So we had to go find the one like person in the whole area that cleans Moroccan rugs or Persian rugs kind of thing. Dry cleaning bills are through the roof.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, it was terrible. And the thing is, you know, we happened to be under contract when that happened. And so because we were already under contract, I actually talked to all the bankers and moved our closing date up 11 days sooner just to get out of that situation because it was such a bad situation. That was kind of a mixed blessing where it's like, okay, yes, the housing market is bad. Yes, it's not a great time to buy a house. At the same time, like, what are our goals? So like, that's one thing we do when we talk about student loan consults is like, okay, I hear what is going on in your life, but like, what are your goals? Like, what are you trying to do? Buying a house to get rich is a terrible idea. If housing goes up a lot, you know, it's kind of unexpected. It's sort of a surprise versus like investing in the stock market long-term, you're expecting it's going to be exponential returns, whereas housing is usually inflation level. So, you know, I say that, I guess, to say that, okay, at the end of the day, and having this conversation with my wife, we're like, well, what can we afford? Okay, we can afford X. Well, therefore, buying Y is reasonable because we can afford X. And are we going to stay in this area for 5 years? Is this a place where we could see sending our kids to the public schools in the area? Like all these questions you ask yourself and you're like, okay, sure. And so if the housing market takes a downturn, what's not going to change is our monthly payment. You know, our monthly payment's going to stay the same. And so, yeah, all things equal, you know, if the housing market takes a downturn, if we needed to sell the house, that wouldn't be a great thing. But also, I would say we're blessed enough to be in a position where if we wanted to, we could pay down the mortgage and take a loss on the house. I think most people can't do that. To the higher income people listening, I would say take 2 times your household income, gross income, multiply that by 2, maybe 2.5 if you're in a more expensive area and you're really interested in staying there long term. Can you buy a house for less than that right now? And especially, can you buy a house, like, are you willing to do some renovation work? So if you say yes to that, then I think it's fine to buy a house. And if you're not able to do that, then I would just say, well, you know, is something going to change about your situation? Are you going to move? Are you going to make more money? Are you going to buy your own business, like become a dental practice owner or something like that? We're not going to have the answers for you on this podcast today because nobody can predict the future. But we just want to give people some things to think about. Rob, you talk to a lot of people about their budget. Like, what kind of things do you see come up when people buy a house? And what kind of budget issues does that sometimes create for people?
I mean, most people are looking to do like a one-to-one trade-off between what their rent payment is and what their mortgage payment would be and what, like, how much house they can afford. And that's usually bad math because the cost of maintenance and upkeep and then taxes and insurance, you know, go up over time, regardless of if your mortgage payment is fixed. And so a lot of people don't realize that the all-in cost of owning a house goes well beyond the mortgage payment. The rule of thumb that people say is 1% of the housing price is like the maintenance. So if someone has a $400,000 house has about $4,000 in maintenance they can expect to do a year on top of their mortgage. Now, I can tell you from experience that it doesn't happen every year. It's like lumpy. For example, we bought our house. Everything was fine. I left my job as a portfolio manager and an investment analyst in 2015. And in 2016, my HVAC broke. We needed a new roof. My car died and I had a new baby. So the baby and the car don't have anything to do with it. But all of a sudden, you know, you gotta come up with this money. And what I see a lot of people doing is they put it on payment plan. Before someone buys a house, they have to understand that the cost of ownership goes well beyond the mortgage. So I think people should actually trade down. If you're used to paying $2,000 a month in rent, might want to look for like a $1,500 to $1,800 mortgage. And then because you're going to have to bake in that extra cost. The other thing is that aside from the down payment, I don't know anybody who's moved into their house and said, oh, this is exactly how we want it to be. You know, we don't need to paint. We don't need to do anything. We don't even need any new furniture. Everything is moving. We can just move all our stuff in. Most people I see end up spending about 5% of the purchase price in like updates and furnishing. So a $400,000 house, an extra $20,000 on that stuff or more, honestly, it could be 5 to 10%. So you've got to bake that in to the cost of buying a house also. And so what I don't want to see is people be house poor and just sort of be like, okay, well, this is more expensive than I want. And then they have to sell and usually at a wrong time. Plus, when you sell a house, you have to pay a realtor fee. And if that's 5, 6%, you know, unless housing prices have gone up 5, 6%, you're going to take a loss after fees anyway. When people are looking for houses, they have to make sure they have enough cash to do the projects. They have to make sure they have enough cushion in their budget to do above and beyond what the mortgage payment is.
I'll tell you one way around the furnishings expense. I looked up couches because my wife really wanted a couch. And I saw the fancy couch delivery schedule was sometime in 2022. And this was back in like June. And I was like, all right, we're not going to wait until 2022 to get a good couch. So we just looked at Craigslist until we found a nice couch that was close to $1,000 or $2,000. It was like a mortgage. It was expensive for Craigslist, right? And I was like, that's our couch. That's like the kind of thing we're going for. So I rented the U-Haul. We organized everything. We bought cabinets from like this guy who like restores old cabinets that he buys off of like estate sales or something. So we got one of those. We got a couch and we got some random really nice bookcase and stuff all on Craigslist in a day. We felt super accomplished. So that's one way you can save some money is literally, you know, a handful of money in Craigslist. So that's one way around the supply chain disruptions. But in terms of the maintenance, you make a really good point. One thing that would be really dangerous is somebody who thinks, okay, I'm tired of renting. You know, people say throwing money away on rent, which we know is not really necessarily a thing, but people right. feel that way. So they say, okay, I'm going through all this stress in my living situation. Buying will fix it. In other words, you look for the solution to your problem and try to fit that solution to your problem. And so people say, okay, this is going to fix it. But then that person that's not necessarily super financially secure goes into that new situation of homeownership. And then something like that happens, Rob. You have the kid, the car, the HVAC breaks, the roof starts leaking, all these things happen all at once. And then suddenly this financial blessing turns into a financial curse. Mm-hmm. I think that there's certain parts of the country where owning a house is more of a status symbol than a sound financial decision. So people a lot of times will look at buying a house and they'll say, well, what, you know, this is key to my financial future. And that's not true. Whenever I like think about something that's a bad financial product, I just say like have some celebrity endorser and make it sound really folksy. So I'm thinking about reverse mortgages. So, you know, what do you have for like reverse mortgage ads? It's basically like some investment company pays you a monthly amount of money over time and takes over ownership of your house. And why is that? Because most middle-class people have all their money tied up in their house. They don't have big brokerage accounts. They don't have big retirement accounts, right? They don't have seven-figure portfolios. You know, maybe in a lot of cases, most middle-class people have most of their money tied up in their home. How do you get access to that? Well, have someone, you know, charge you 10% interest rate to get access to the equity in your home, you know, with some folksy celebrity person from the 60s that like gets people to feel comfortable, right? So I guess the point there is, okay, say you're in like an expensive place, like a San Francisco and New York or one of these places where homeownership is just seems impossible. Well, that's okay. Like homeownership is not the key to your financial future. Homeownership can be a step to giving yourself financial security, but it doesn't have to be the end goal. The end goal should be you feeling financially secure and having a safe place that you can call home to live with your family. In some parts of the country, that's going to mean stepping up a little bit more than maybe you want to because you can, because you have that financial security, you have the money for when the roof breaks and you have saved up for those unexpected expenses. Whereas, you know, in other parts of the country, it's going to mean renting, maybe trying to negotiate a multi-year lease, like in a San Francisco, where it just doesn't make financial sense to buy a house unless you have millions of dollars.
I 100% agree. I think in general, home ownership is overrated in terms of how much it's going to revolutionize someone's financial well-being because of the maintenance. And because, you know, all it takes is one project that you do after living in the house for 5 years to totally break the math and say, well, what was actually, you know, a decent investment is now put me underwater because of all the extra money I'm putting in to redo the bathroom or the kitchen or whatever, unless the buying is right. And so there's nothing at all wrong with renting. What, as we know, what happened, what matters most is how much money you have left over. And so if you have money left over and you're investing it, in like a diversified portfolio, low cost, you could actually end up in a better net worth situation than you would if you owned a house and put that cash flow toward the extra maintenance costs of owning a house. So if anyone's looking to buy a house, like, you don't need it to become wealthy. And then the other thing is, a lot of people say, well, I want to get a starter home. And then when I have a family, I want to move. My advice is, I don't know if it's advice, but my opinion is to skip the starter home and just save up to the house that you think you're going to want to raise kids in, if depending on if you have a family or not. Because what happens is, a lot of people, they buy the starter home, they put all this money into it, they do the maintenance, they own it for a short amount of time, which means that the realtor fees cut into it, and any money they put in, they don't get out. Then they have a kid that, oh, my kid's about to go to kindergarten, I need to get into the XY school district in order to have them go to a decent kindergarten or whatever. So they move, leave all that money on the table, you know, maybe sell the house for, like, on paper, like a modest gain, but really they're underwater with all the extra costs associated with it. And now they're in the house that they see themselves being in. So renting is underrated. Skip the starter home would be my perspective.
I've heard this good rule. This is a rule that comes from another blogger called Millennial Revolution. They say, take the mortgage price or the mortgage payment, multiply by 1.4, and that's the equivalent rental number. If you include all the maintenance, agree. All the extra stuff. Yeah. So if you have like $1,000 mortgage multiplied by 1.4, so $1,000 mortgage is equal to a $1,400 a month rent.
And that sounds right to me.
Yeah. And even with that math, also take into account that you need to stay in a place for at least 5 to 7 years to make it make sense, particularly in a really hot market, particularly in a super hot market. So it used to be like in St. Louis, all the residents and fellows would buy a house because it was super cheap. They could get access to financing. And so they could buy a $150,000 to $200,000 house, which was pretty nice in a decent neighborhood. Maybe they have kids. So that was pretty good. But the problem is now those houses are more expensive. And so if you're going to be a resident or a fellow where you might have to move in 3 to 5 years, and you know that's probably going to happen, buying a house in this kind of a market is probably a really bad idea. That said, buying a house, even if something that's, if it's a bad idea, that's still not going to be something that's going to ruin you. It won't. And the reason why it won't ruin you is simply because if rent does increase, like we're kind of predicting, then as long as you buy something that you can kind of cover most of the expenses, if you had to rent it out, you could do that and afford to hold on to the house and pay the mortgage and not have it be this huge drain. For example, what you did with your condo in 2005, you kind of have to plan, what is your worst case scenario when you're getting yourself into this situation? You want to say, well, what is our exit strategy? Let's say we move. Okay, if we have positive equity, we can sell. If we don't have positive equity, we're going to have to rent. Well, let's look around the neighborhood. What is the monthly rent for a place like this? And could we rent a place like this for X amount of money a month, covering our mortgage and property taxes, and plus a little, maybe 1 or 2 months for vacancies? And if the answer is yes, with rental prices probably going up in the next several years, then I think it's an okay decision. It's a good thing to do. And if you look around and, like, you know, the monthly rent that you're seeing for similar places would not cover your mortgage payment, then that's a real red flag. Like, so for example, if you're in a San Francisco and you're thinking, oh, we're going to buy a place and we're going to move, well, your rental payment that you're going to get is not going to cover your mortgage. And so the worst case scenario would be you have a mortgage payment that's much higher than your rent, and the price of the house is a lot lower. So that's why we say, you know, it depends on the market. You know, if, as long as you can look at the house and say, okay, well, our rent could cover all of our all-in mortgage payments right now, then I think it's a reasonable thing to step up and buy a house if that's something that you've really always wanted to do.
I'm always amazed at, I mean, this is one of the largest assets that most people will ever buy in their life. And just the reliance on, okay, well, oh, the monthly payment is close to the rent. Okay. Oh, and my real estate agent did comps and it seems like we'll be okay. Okay, let's buy this major giant purchase. I'm always amazed with how quickly people go and do that and trust their real estate agent to do that analysis for them rather than doing it on their own or hiring like a professional or, you know, just finding all the resources online. Because I can tell you, we did that. Like when I bought the condo in 2005, it was near Washington University and it was in a rental kind of neighborhood. And I looked at the rents and I said, I did that exactly what you said. I said, well, if we can't sell it, I know we can at least get a certain amount of rent. There's plenty of grad students here with kids, like they'll rent this place. And I ended up having to do that. Now, had I had to sit on that place for 3 years with no rental income or a lot of vacancy, then, you know, that would have been pretty tough. So this is a major, major financial decision, and you got to go above and beyond any research you've done on anything, including like job hunting. You know, like if you're looking for a new job and looking for a new career path, I mean, and you put a lot of time and effort into interviews and researching companies. You got to do that kind of homework buying a house, because what you don't want to happen is like what you hit on before was, I've seen too many of my family budget clients where they've had to drain retirement savings and to pay for stuff, or they've had to go into credit card debt, or, you know, have high interest loans to cover the home maintenance. And that's where, you know, where you said it, it's not a blessing. It becomes kind of a curse. And it, instead of helping your financial future, it totally wrecks it and puts you way behind. So do the homework for sure.
Yeah. I think you want to get a good balance. For me, buying a house or renting a house is just a pure financial decision. For my wife, it's because she desperately wants to have a place that's her own, that she can renovate and decorate and make it something that's hers, that she can come home from a stressful day operating on patients and have a place that's peaceful. In other words, it's more of an emotion-based decision, and that's fine. It's probably a combination of the two. We are not pure intellectual or emotion-based creatures. We're a mix of the two. My wife's obviously not making that house purchase purely based on emotion, and I'm not making it purely based on reason either. But I just say that to say, like, you want to look at both sides of the coin and say, is this going to be a blessing to my family, or could this end up stressing us out? To be real honest, we could have afforded to pay $100,000 over asking price for some of the houses out there. And, you know, I'm not talking about $1 million house. I'm talking about a $600,000 or $700,000 house that's fully renovated that goes for $100,000 over. In some situations, like some meetings with contractors that we have, sometimes I think, you know what? We should have done that. You know, I mean, it's not about what the house, what you pay for. It's about what it's worth and what it lets you do. And so if that house could have let us have a kitchen that was done, have a place, master bathroom that was already renovated, right? Then maybe that would have been worth it. Now, in my case, every house we looked at, my wife's like, well, I would change this. And I was like, that's fine. Like, that's a reasonable view. But if that's how you feel about most all these houses that we look at, given that somebody else is willing to pay a ton of money over asking price because the kitchen is from 2005 and not 1970, you know, it doesn't make sense to pay up extra money and rip apart a kitchen from 2005 when somebody wants to pay a lot for that kitchen. Whereas if you're going to rip it out anyway, go buy the 1970 kitchen and tear it down to the studs and start over. So that was kind of the reason why we like did the path that we did was, okay, you want to do a lot of renovations anyway. Well, let's go find a house that would make sense financially where we're not just totally flushing money down the toilet. And, you know, and enjoy yourself. Like, I think that it's okay to pour money into a house that you won't necessarily get back if you can afford it. I mean, a lot of the listeners of our podcast, really stressful jobs, really stressful day to day. And, you know, my wife loves to take like a long bath in a soaking tub. Well, we're going to pour money into that to get her that, even though it may or may not get it back to us financially, right?
Yeah, in some ways, it's sort of, you can think of your house kind of like a vacation. You can spend extra money and it's just out the door. Like, you're never going to see it again. But if it makes your quality of life better, if it's things that you want. And in your case, like, if you're going to be doing the stuff anyway, you know, you're going to be doing the work anyway. You might as well get one that needs a lot of work, because even if it was nice already, you're probably going to make it your own. But I can tell you, you know, from experience, just working with clients and my own personal experience, that once you do one project and you improve one room,
it's over.
You start itching to do the rest. So just know that once your kitchen is done, you know, you're going to walk into your house, and this goes for everyone out there. Like, once you do one room, you walk into the room, you're like, wow, this room is great. This turned out awesome. I'm so glad we did that. Oh, but our bathroom, doesn't quite fit now. Or, the living room, I don't know, the style doesn't quite go. And you start thinking, because we're doing that. We're doing like our back room. It was like a no holds barred room for young kids. And now we're growing it up into like a proper family room.
Yeah.
And we're also redoing the kids' bathroom, which, you know, was built in the 1940s. So we're redoing that. But after doing it, it's like, our powder room on the main floor really could use some work. And what about, you know, so anyway, it's going to happen. And so you got to anticipate that once you get it done, you either have to say, this is it, or you have to say, we might go above and beyond. So I always tell people, like, if you're thinking about doing a home improvement project, and this is just for that project itself, let alone like any other things that come up, always bake in an extra 25% more than what they're quoting you, because chances are they're going to go in the walls and find something that's different, or you're going to have to make some different choices. So if someone's saying this project's going to cost $30,000, just anticipating it costing closer to $40,000. And if they say, oh, this project's only going to take 2 or 3 months, the 25% rule applies there. No, it's not 3 months. It's more like 4 or 5 months. Just make that into your expectations and your budget so that you know that when things happen, you're not all of a sudden
covered.
Yeah, where you're covered. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so a lot of people, I'll say this as sort of my concluding thought at least. So a lot of people, I'm not saying all, but a lot of people use education or home purchases or other kinds of spending as therapy, because all of us have stresses and anxieties and things we're working through, especially this past year and a half with the pandemic. I don't care what your experience has been. It's been really hard. I don't know a whole lot of people that are like, I met one guy literally that I can think of off the top of my head that was like, oh yeah, this year and a half has been awesome. I'm like, I just looked at him and I wanted to say, you sicko.
Like, reality, you know? Yeah.
And he said like, well, I understand that a lot of other people have had a really hard year. Yeah, I'm not discounting that, but this is the year I got married. Like, we finally got to be together and experience like a whole lot of cool like walks outside together. And like, I was like, wow, this guy's, I gotta get some of what he has, you know.
But more of like a silver lining guy. Yeah,
he was a silver lining guy, right? But so most of the time people have anxieties in a normal year, and with a pandemic this is exacerbated like 10x, you know, with just everything that people are going through. So people will use financial things to deal with the emotions they're going through. For some people, it's like you feel like you're not enough. So maybe you go and get more education than you might have otherwise got with student loans to make sure that you feel like you're enough. Not all people. A lot of people look at it like, I want to be a dentist, I'm going to go get my dental degree. I'm just saying, for some people that happens. Same thing with houses, right? If you renovate that one room, maybe you want to renovate all of it. Sometimes it's just because, well, you just like the way it looks and you want to do it. Other people, that's like, oh my gosh, you know, I have to feel like I'm providing a safe home for my children, or a safe house, or the house that I want after working so hard for so long. There's all these emotions tied up into it. Men and cars. Maybe you're the nerdy kid or something, or maybe you were like me in middle school. I was like the fat kid in school, right? In middle school, you know, like everybody has awkward middle school years. And so maybe when you come out the other side and you have the finances to afford a nice car, maybe that makes you feel a certain way. Like, oh, maybe, you know, people view me differently than the way people used to view me as this like fat kid loser or something. I don't know. I don't know if that's how I was in middle school, but at times I felt that way. I'm not saying that for me that the solution to that was buying a car. It's not. Just be aware that that happens a lot. And it's not always one thing. It could be the house. It could be something else in your budget, right? It could be your education, home renovations. Identify like what that therapy is. And then whatever your coping mechanism is, see if you can find like a healthier coping mechanism, if that makes sense. For me, I guess my coping mechanism is playing video games with my brothers and friends. I try to make that the way I cope with stress versus going out and spending a ton of money on something. So just kind of like a suggestion, like a mental health suggestion, identify what triggers you to do things with your finances that interfere with your values or interfere with what you're trying to do, your life goals, and then see if you can find a cheaper or satisfying alternative to that that won't interfere with you achieving these life milestones that you want.
Totally agree. I mean, I started meditating once I had kids. I meditate once or twice a day. And then just, you know, going out on walks and stuff like that. The thing is, like, most decisions have a financial bend to it. So whether it's a house, whether it's a vacation, whether it's a hobby, there's some sort of monetary, for the most part, you know, unless you are just meditating or walking or whatever. If that's something that you're working hard for and you want to spend your money in that way, even if it's like your morning coffee, like once you have your coffee, you're good to go. Whatever's your thing, go do it. But if there's things in your life that you're doing that are not in your core values, or, you know, maybe sabotaging you or counterintuitive or counter to what you're trying to accomplish, those are the things to cut out in terms of your spending so that you can make room for the things that will make you feel more fulfilled. And remember too, for those families out there, you know, you got to take care of yourselves as individuals. And then for yourselves as a couple, make sure you're spending money on things your relationship can be strong with. And then make sure, obviously, you're spending money on things that make your family whole and support your family values. If you can identify your spending in those three areas, as individuals, as a couple, as a family, and get rid of everything else, you can afford to do the things you enjoy guilt-free without having to worry about making poor financial decisions. And as it relates to a house, because it is such a major financial decision, think about it in those contexts of what Travis was just talking about. And obviously, because it's such a big purchase, you got to do the math behind it also. So it's a good mix between, you know, your money personality and Christine's money personality too. But I think that's great advice that you just gave everybody.
Well, we've got a lot of things happening, even though interest and payments are paused until the end of January. We've got a lot of stuff that we need to help our clients with on making sure their PSLF payments are set up the right way, just to make sure that that's all good before you leave Fed Loan in December. We've got a lot of people that are graduating that need help consolidating their loans and consolidating it to the right place, you know, in a place that would be okay when they move to new servicers. So we've got that we're helping people out with. And we've also just got, you know, a lot of people still that are just on the wrong payment plan, on the wrong strategy. Just the other day, I had somebody who'd committed themselves to the military for years. And I think they could get out of it if they don't take the loan money. You know, like every year they take the loan money, they're committed to another year. They didn't need to. It's wonderful if you serve our country, but I also want it to be because you want to and not because of a loan forgiveness program. And so this person kind of felt a little trapped within the confines of like having to do this to pay off her loans. And she didn't need to. And the impact in her life was ginormous because she felt so stressed trying to juggle everything and trying to, you know, get into a practice and be your own business owner and everything, be your own boss. It's just amazing to see even 18 months into this, there's tons of people we talk to every week that are on the wrong plan, on the wrong strategy, and not putting their life first instead of putting their loans first, which is always a mistake. So you always want to put your life goals first, loans second. I guess I lied about my last statement being the last statement, right? Put your life first and put your house goals second. Make the house the thing that helps you achieve your life goals, not putting the house first and bringing your life along with it. That's not ideal. So thank you, Rob, for being on the show today. Hopefully people will make smart home buying decisions in this crazy market.